Sonia Poulton on today's News Talk TNT.
Good morning, world, and welcome to Wednesday on today's News Talk with me, Sonia Poulton. On today's show, after sensitive military data was hacked, we'll ask just how cyber secure is the UK. And a damning survey has exposed the fact that confidence within the farming industry is at an all-time low. We'll find out why. And we're joined by Matt Campbell, whose brother died during 9/11 and who still has some very big questions to ask about that day. And before we get to the question of the day, I'd like to say good morning to you, Joanne. You have inspired our question of the day. Joanne wrote to us. She said, for your question of the day, please can we have things we have lost since 1970? Well, we decided to broaden out slightly, Joanne, but let me continue with your letter. I have compiled a long list of stuff that we have lost, yet we are paying more taxes. I put a comment on a YouTube video regarding means testing pensioners, and people have added to my list a few illegal aid, NHS dentistry, public toilets, free higher education, affordable energy, very little processed food, one small dustbin per household is not much packaging, reliable and affordable transport system, herbalists, youth clubs. I'd be very grateful if you ask the question so that I can grow the list. Well, we are asking the question, Joanne. So our question of the day, nominated right by you, is what things do you never see anymore? And you can call us. Here are our numbers.
Thanks for listening to us. Now we want to listen to you. Our lines are open from the U.S. and Canada. Call 1-888-201-6425. From the U.K., call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
And we are already getting a wonderful response to our question of the day. Good morning to you, Annabelle. Honestly, some of your suggestions just made me smile. Blue skies, she said. Pencils behind the ears, ashtrays, white dog poop, stickers on weather maps. Wonderful, absolutely wonderful. Good morning to you. Right. I am delighted to see that Parliament will finally be turning its gaze towards SLAPP today. This is strategic litigation against public participation, and it is a recognised tactic that wealthy people use often against journalists, researchers and publishers, and they do it by using the law courts and with the aim of draining their target financially and psychologically, and with the purpose of silencing them. This has been going on for a very, very long time, and it's outrageous that more has not been done about it. Too many people have been able to hide behind the British law courts to pursue those whose job it is to document our world. The law is absolutely far behind on this, and to a degree, I can see why. The judicial system has benefited from such cases, even though the courts are routinely bogged down with such cases. They're often lightweight and they only survive because of the money and time thrown at them, and usually not on the actual merits of the case. So at 9 a.m. this morning, there will be a debate in Parliament to consider this bill. This is a continuation of it started in February this year. At this stage, it's more about legislative scrutiny. But I believe I speak on behalf of every investigative journalist when I say not before time. It's a private member's bill sponsored by Labour's Wayne David. And the bill outlines the details as follows. SLAPP typically involves the subject of an allegation or investigation of wrongdoing, seeking to use the threat of expensive litigation, usually based on a claim that the material is defamatory, to try to prevent publication. And the issue has been a long-running campaign for many people, certainly those who advocate for free speech organisations, journalists, media practitioners, etc. And the government ran a call for evidence in 2022 and subsequently committed to introducing new measures to finally address this issue. But here's the problem, and it really is a problem, is that due to the scope of this legislation, the measures only apply to claims relating to economic crimes such as fraud. The bill would largely replicate these provisions, but they would apply to a claim relating to any issue, but still within the fraud mode. This isn't enough. It's a start, but we need to broaden out SLAPP. It's used for a multitude of silencing purposes and not always related to economic crime. Only once this dastardly practice is fully acknowledged can journalists and publishers truly feel free to publish and be damned. And on that note, let's find out what's going on with the UK news headlines from our Gemma Cooper.
Russia, gas prices, COVID mandates.
It just doesn't seem like anybody's doing anything about it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Good morning, Gemma. It's hump day, Gemma, your least favourite day of the week, I believe.
Well, yeah, I do feel hump day. I don't know why. I do feel that kind of junction in the week, but I'm buoyed up by all the comments that we're getting about what do we not see anymore from the 70s, you know, all of those things, the very words white dog poo cast me back to my childhood. And that's another thing we don't see now, kids playing out on the street. We just don't, do we? You know, riding their bikes all day. Your mum and dad didn't know where you were. I mean, I was one of those kids, you know, see you at tea time, mum. Can you imagine that now? You just take off on your bike. Your mum doesn't know where you are. You have a brilliant day. Social services would be round in a heartbeat. You'd be taken away, you know, but it's called being free, being a kid, building resilience, building confidence. What, you know, I our generation was the best. That's it. End of. If you're born in the 70s, you're the best.
Well, the funny thing is that I wasn't born in the 70s, I was born in the 60s, so clearly I'm older than you, Gemma. Here's the thing, is we'd kind of go, in the holidays, for example, I'd go out from early morning, come back early evening, and everything was hunky-dory and fine, and I was being cared for, but it's just, we were more free. You're absolutely right. When you just said kids playing in the streets, that literally just took me back. It's horrible where we've got to. I love that question. I really do. I think it's such a precious question. And honestly, we're getting such great responses. I will read out more later. So Gemma, tell us what's going on in the UK today.
Well, it's very interesting you're talking about cybersecurity, actually, because there's a huge headline at the moment, a massive series of issues, tech issues at UK airports, which led to thousands and thousands of passengers right across the country having massive delays at passport check-ins when they flew back in to the country, a massive tech outage. I think it's a very salient warning about how easily our movements and restrictions of movement can be controlled by the click of a button. There was a tech outage, which meant thousands were queuing at passport control. It's since been resolved, but it happened at pretty much all the UK major airports. So I think we need to be very wary of all these things that are brought in for our convenience and safety and ease of travel, anything but when it goes wrong. Also, the online safety bill is beginning to kick in with new safety rules announced for tech companies and social media firms about what they should be letting children see online. Another one to watch, because it comes in and it's ushered in under safety for children. Next thing you know, it's restrictions for all of us. And also, we just have to look at this headline and the official version of this event compared to what we know. And that is, of course, the AstraZeneca vaccine being withdrawn from worldwide use. The pharmaceutical giant says it's because of lack of demand and newer vaccines coming up. We know the truth here on TNT. Millions around the world know the truth. And all of the families that are still taking their cases through the High Court as a result of injury and harm caused by this very vaccine, they know the truth too. And they've been speaking out in reaction to this story.
Wow. Which story should we go deeper on?
Let's go for vaccine. Let's go for
it.
I mean, it's got to be. It's got to be because of the reaction and the way this is being reported, the absolutely slavish way most of the mainstream are reporting this. Oh, it's because, you know, newer vaccines have come up. There's no commercial demand for it anymore. Nobody wants it. Yeah, nobody wants it because everybody knows the dangers. So basically, this has come 3 months after the company admitted in court documents that it can cause vaccine-induced thrombocytopenia, thrombosis with thrombocytopenia. That was admitted in court documents. It's now made the authorization to withdraw it in the EU on March the 5th. The court documents went in February. And of course, it came into effect yesterday. It's voluntarily withdrawing its marketing authorization, and it will do that in other countries as well, apply for marketing authorization to be withdrawn. That means around the world, it will be stopped. They say it's for commercial reasons, been superseded by newer vaccines that tackle new variants. And it also says, I don't know how the company can say this with a straight face, whilst it is aware of its court documents, it insists its decision to withdraw the jab is not linked to the court case or the firm's admission that it can cause thrombocytopenia. It says it's pure coincidence the timing of this withdrawal, and it then trots out the 6.5 million lives saved. Pure coincidence. Well, there's no such thing as coincidence. It's the universe's way of telling you to pay attention. And there's this is what applies here. The families that are still taking AstraZeneca to court, in the High Court, the 50 remaining families after 12 had to drop out due to that legal technicality. Kate Scott, wife of Jamie Scott, who suffered life-changing injuries and had to give up work, she says today, AstraZeneca can say this is for commercial reasons, but maybe it's because it can no longer be seen as being within acceptable safety parameters. That's what they said about their vaccine. They said the safety vaccine parameters were acceptable. And she says, we have 445 confirmed cases of vaccine-induced thrombocytopenia, 81 fatal in the UK alone, 50 still going through the High Court. And her husband, poor Jamie, who had to give up work, he's a young man, he said, this is good news, but it should have been withdrawn after just one case. That's what other countries did. The UK didn't. The UK was one of the last to stop using AstraZeneca in 2021. And then it went over to Pfizer and Moderna for all the boosters. So the official version of, all, you know, there's newer vaccines coming through, we don't need AstraZeneca's one anymore, is what the mainstream are reporting, especially The Guardian, which, as we know, is funded by Bill and Melinda Gates. And the BBC aren't even covering this story. They're not even covering this story. I had a good look on their homepage this morning. I thought, this is massive. No, they're not covering it at all. So it just goes to show how controlled, how the narrative is still being dominated. And of course, we see all the awards and the gongs that the heads of AstraZeneca got. It's absolutely disgraceful. But at least this awful, evil thing is now off the market. Let's hope we see others following suit, Sonia.
Well, it's good news. It is good news because it should, as you say, should have been pulled from the market long time ago. And it's interesting, isn't it, that you're saying that the UK is one of the last to pull it, despite evidence that it should have been pulled a long time ago. Well, Hedley Reese, who is a big pharma insider and very much part of the chain, he's been on this show, he's been on TNT a number of times to talk about it. And Hedley absolutely maintains that the UK was the test bed for the COVID vaccinations. So that's interesting, isn't it? So that we were one of the first and we were one of the last. So that's already very interesting. And of course, you have the issue of people like poor Alex Mitchell, who had to have his leg amputated after receiving AZ. And then, of course, there was Lisa, the BBC presenter, and her husband has come out saying, you know, what about us? And so these things are all fairly horrendous. But the problem, of course, Gemma, is the media. Your reporting right there is that they're either ignoring it or they're just going along with the official narrative. Well, they're complicit, aren't they? They pushed it like a good un. You know, they were given advertising budgets from Parliament in order to push C19 and all of the fear-mongering messages that went along with it. And so they're complicit. It's very hard. I was watching a clip with Dr. Range, who used to be on This Morning and not anymore, and he was very much a pusher. And now they're all having to, you know, pull back, aren't they? They're all having to backtrack on what they've previously done. So this is a very interesting period, Gemma, and it's bittersweet, isn't it? Because along with us acknowledging what has taken place, of course, there are all these casualties and people who have died who are seriously or have had limbs amputated. So it's not a victory as such, because this never, ever should have risen in the first place, should it?
It shouldn't. And also, the health secretary has announced a review of the vaccine damage payment scheme after claims have soared. So last year, for example, there were just over 4,000 claims submitted to the vaccine payment scheme. Compare that to 2022. So we had just over 4,000 last year in the UK. In 2022, the year before, 480. And in 2021, 48. In 2020, 26. So look at the jump in that. People now beginning to realise the things that are wrong with them may actually be linked to something that you had stuck in you, that you were coerced into having. So the health secretary has announced a huge review of reforming the payment scheme, as now we have thousands and thousands coming through. And of course, anecdotally, if you're putting a claim into the government for vaccine damage and you talk to your friends and family about it, you then set the alarm bells off in other people's heads, and they think, well, maybe that thing that I've got, and people start to join the dots. So there is this shift happening that we talk about all the time. I will take this as a win on hump day. You know, AstraZeneca gone worldwide. It is very worrying that they say, well, there are newer vaccines coming up. Yeah, well, there might be now, but I don't think the appetite worldwide for vaccines is what it was in 2020. And I don't think it ever will be again. So it's this fork in the road and where we go from here. But it is good news globally. It has come too late for all the people you just talked about, for poor Jamie Scott, who suffered life-changing injuries. And of course, for still the 50 families going through the High Court, pursuing this claim under the UK Protection Act, you know, to see justice done. Too late for them, but let's hope we do see justice done for those remaining 50 families in the High Court with this case.
And hallelujah to that. And you're absolutely right, it is a win. If you have it withdrawn worldwide, that is a huge, huge message that is being sent out. So you're right, we will take that a win on this hump day. We'll see Gemma in the next hour. We'll be right back.
TNT's David Curtin.
The Israeli Defense Force started bombing Rafah. Now, if you don't know, Rafah is the city at the bottom southern end of the Gaza Strip. It only takes up about 20% of the territory of Gaza, which was already well overpopulated and overcrowded before the Israeli Defense Force started its attacks on Gaza. They continually move people further south and further south and further south, and they have been doing that over the last 7 months until now. As well as the existing population of Rafah, there are 1.4 million refugees from other parts of Gaza, many of whom were already refugees themselves, and they've been moved into the southern 20% of the Gaza Strip in Rafah, which Israel said would be safe.
David Curtin on today's news. Not see it coming. It's pre-diabetes, and it captures one in three adults. You may not even know you have it, but you can escape. Take the 1 minute pre-diabetes risk test to know where you stand. With early diagnosis, you can change the outcome and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Be your own hero on smartphones everywhere at doihaveprediabetes.org.
CO2 sustains all life on Earth, but now it's in long-term decline. We face the return of an ice age. We mandate that the truth be told. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back. Now, the government stopped short of naming China behind the cyber attack earlier this week that saw details of army personnel finances laid bare. But regardless of the malign actors responsible, it does raise serious questions about the strength of the UK's cyber defences and how vulnerable we may be to future attack. Joining me with his thoughts on this matter is Jonathan Wiseman, cybersecurity expert. Good morning, Jonathan.
Good morning, Sonia. How's it going?
Well, it's going great, actually. Tell us, how serious is an attack such as this on the personnel data of the armed forces?
Well, in terms of the breach itself, this is what we've become quite used to. In terms of the numbers, we're talking about 270,000 records here of active and retired military personnel. But we're used to this not only from government agencies being breached, but also in the private sector. So this is now probably a weekly occurrence, even a daily occurrence. The issue here, I suppose, is the reputational damage to the UK government and to its procurement and to its risk management processes when it comes to engaging with third parties. Because it wasn't actually the MOD directly who was breached. It was one of the suppliers or the contractors or the outsource groups that they contract with for their payroll system. So as far as Britain's standing globally goes, and as far as defence and cybersecurity goes, it's a huge reputational damage, and also to the morale of those active and retired military personnel. So I think it's a reputational issue, and it's also loss of morale. And of course, some of those folks who have been breached and had their data leaked could now be subject to tailored and specific threats. If people can compromise them, knowing their position, perhaps knowing some of their financial details, because some banking details may have been leaked as well. So there's multifacets to this particular incident.
You're right, of course. This is happening on an almost constant basis now. So is it actually possible to pin the blame on this one on Beijing?
Well, I don't know the specifics in terms of how they can see a digital footprint that it could have been. I mean, it's not going to be as simple as just tracing an IP address, given VPNs and all the complexity that goes on with an actual breach. So that's not so simple at this point with the limited information that we have. However, what we can say is this. I mean, this particular organization, SSCL, claims that it's the largest provider to the UK government and also to the Metropolitan Police and to the Ministry of Defence. So they should have pretty reasonable security in place, you would assume, given the sensitivity of the clients that they work for. And of course, the stringent audits and stringent processes that would be in place when the government and the MOD bring them on board. Now, what that means is the bar is probably going to be higher for a successful cyber attack. And so that means nation state actors, which is really the most pernicious threat actor that you can face, become more likely to have been involved. If you're just a local bakery with a website, well, anyone could potentially hack you if you don't have the resources to put in place all the due controls that you need. But when you're talking about the payroll system for the Ministry of Defence, you would expect it to be a more sophisticated attack required. And that's why immediately you start thinking about nation state actors.
So when you say nation state actors, are you talking about an inside job here?
Well, that's another possibility, of course, is you could have a backdoor. You could have someone on the inside of the organization that is compromised, or even just sloppiness, right? But in either case, whether it's human error or deliberate, it's still a kind of a form of the insider threat. Now, what I mean here is we have different threat actors that we characterize when it comes to cybersecurity. So, for example, some people are ethical hackers. They might have a problem with fossil fuels, for example, and they might just decide to make it their mission to hack oil company websites. You might have what we call script kiddies, which are basically just children who just enjoy the thrill of defacing a website. But you also have a different type of threat actor, which is a threat that you can characterize as being nation state actors, which basically means they have the resources that you could expect of a country that's determined to cause harm. Because if the actors were to be within, say, the UK, then they would be subject to UK law and you would be able to prosecute them more easily. If it's a country which you don't have an extradition treaty to, or it's a rogue nation state, then they could potentially act with impunity. So, for example, you see a lot of malicious cyber activity coming from countries like Russia, because you're not realistically going to be able to get those people to come over to the UK to face justice, because the Russian authorities might not be as stringent in enforcing cybercrime laws against victims who live in different countries. So again, these are kind of reasons why we're thinking about nation state actors. They probably have some inside reason why, looking at the nature of the attack, they suspect it's China, like a digital footprint, but I haven't seen that yet.
Right. Interesting. So aside from sort of these isolated events, how vulnerable in general is the UK to a cyber attack, do you think?
Well, again, it really depends on the resources of the adversary. So what that means is if a nation as large as China, I don't know the latest population, but it's well over a billion people, it's not very difficult for them potentially, if they have nefarious objectives, to assemble a crack team of 100 people and to find a high prize target and sit down and research and study and find vulnerabilities and produce an exploit that's successful after a month or two just sitting in a room working on it. So the problem you face now is related to, I suppose, international diplomacy. If you have strained relationships with powerful nation states that have cybersecurity adversary skills and expertise, then potentially anything is actually vulnerable to the nation state actor. There's actually very little you can do at that point. Of course, you can try to patch your software in time. You can try to implement all the correct defenses, and all these things will be followed. But we may find out that SSCL, the third-party payroll system and provider who was breached, did actually have good cybersecurity defenses. And nevertheless, what they may have done, these folks, is find what we called a zero day. So an exploit that wasn't previously known. And if it wasn't known in the wild, they might have discovered it and they might be the first ones to breach it with this organization. And there's very little you can do if they choose to research your organization and devote those kinds of resources, because SSCL won't have even that many people day by day trying to secure one part of their system or their website, whereas the nation state adversary may actually have a larger team trying to breach them every day. There's very little you can do when you face those kinds of asymmetric threats.
Yes, no, I take your point. But it would be remiss of me not to ask you about internet safety for children before you leave us today. So obviously, in line with the online safety bill, for example, which is no longer a bill, it's now an act. And the idea is that to tighten up the internet, to make the internet safer for children. So we're hearing things like children under 13 must show ID to use social media. Social media apps such as TikTok and Instagram will be told to install age checks and tame aggressive algorithms, etc. Is it enough, or are we doing the proverbial thing of bolting the stable door because the horse is already halfway across the field?
Well, some of this can make a difference, certainly. I suppose the issue, again, a bit like we're talking about with cybersecurity, where even if you have great laws here to protect yourself against and have, you know, strong punishments for those who do cybercrime, people can just come from different countries where there's impunity. Again, the internet's a big place. So, you know, you could moderate the social media platforms and the search engines, which is what they're talking about through this Ofcom regulation that's coming in next year through the Online Safety Act. The issue again would be, well, other websites will probably just spring up. So for example, there are some websites that I think are quite dangerous potentially, like I think it's Chat Roulette, and they, young people can potentially come on them and just meet other random people, and you can get like predators that use these kinds of websites because you're randomly paired with someone who could be abroad. So one of the questions I would have is, well, what about websites that are hosted elsewhere? Again, I've mentioned like Russia, for example. Would they be subject to it? I highly doubt it. And then also, you know, will there be a market now for websites that don't classify themselves as search engines or social media platforms springing up? You know, so again, it's a bit like the legal vapes and legal highs and all these kinds of things. There's always a loophole. You know, there's some people that go, they make a new type of drug. It's not technically illegal because they change a molecule in the compound. These are actually chemists that do it. The same thing will happen here. But the intent, I certainly support the families have been affected and the intent, but I'm also very concerned, of course, about the civil liberty arguments as well. So it's a very difficult topic, of course.
It is indeed. Thank you so much for joining us this morning and enlightening us, Jonathan. Really appreciate it, everybody. This is Jonathan Wiseman. He is, of course, as you can tell, a cybersecurity expert. We'll be right back.
News.
There is a difference.
What's on the schedule for today?
A little less yappity-yap and a little more
news.
Yay!
Now, TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with your TNT headlines. Washington has threatened to sanction the International Criminal Court if it pursues its case against Israel over alleged war crimes in Gaza. AstraZeneca's finally withdrawn its COVID shots worldwide, months after admitting for the first time in court documents that the jab can cause a rare and potentially deadly side effect. And it's been revealed Washington halted shipments of bombs to Israel last week over concerns they could be used on civilians in Rafah.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365, we never stop sifting fact from fiction,
misinformation from the truth.
From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad, listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk, this is TNT Radio.
Welcome back. Sport England has ditched its Stonewall membership amid warnings that Quangos should distance themselves from the charity. This comes after Kemi Badenoch, the Women's and Equalities Minister, warned groups to cut ties with the charity amid fears over the influence it's having on policy and its stance on transgender issues. Alongside news where a potential legal landmark has been made, where a court rules autistic anorexic teenager cannot be given cross-sex hormones. So is this the end of trans dogma on our organisations? Joining me with his thoughts on this is social commentator Jack David. Good morning, Jack.
Good morning. How are you, UK?
I'm good, thank you. Is this news cause for celebration?
It is, yeah. But considering, you know, this is an organisation who thinks men should be allowed to compete against women in sports, I'm surprised it's took this long, in all honesty. You know, the guys that I work with, we've been saying it for months. Any organisation that's involved with Stonewall will eventually be taken down by their crazy policies and practices. They, you know, they refuse to walk away from, regardless of the evidence that they presented to show how dangerous they are. Stonewall will always go where the funding is at the end of the day. It's why they abandoned gay and lesbian, gay men and lesbians in the first place to go on this gender crusade. You know, it was only last year, I think, the former CEO, Nancy Kelly, referred to lesbians who won't accept that some lesbians now have a penis as sexual racists. You know, they're a disgusting organisation.
About 4 years ago, I was in hospital. I remember tweeting, one day Stonewall will be held to account. And I feel that that is finally happening. Do you think that, because this week we've heard the news that new buildings won't be allowed to have like gender neutral toilets, yep. They're going to be abolished. Do you think that the tide is finally turning? Because I know you're out there and you're shouting along with many other people. But does it feel that we've finally got that shifting sand?
It does, but they need investigating as well. You know, this, I've said it on this show many times, up to 90% of these kids were same-sex attracted that were referred to gender clinics. You know, they have failed in their duty to protect gay and lesbian kids, and therefore they need to be investigated with it. You know, we're all thrown under this umbrella together, but how can you be this one big happy club when to become the T, you've got to eliminate the LGB with so-called gender-affirming care? It doesn't make any sense. That's effectively what they've been promoting, and I'm glad people are starting to see it now and see the damage that they do. The amount of money that this organisation makes from promoting this, you know, disgraceful, dangerous ideology is phenomenal. And that's not including what they receive from the public purse as well. They shouldn't be getting any funding from us.
It's absolutely outrageous. But why do you think it's taken so long for people to finally start waking up to what's going on?
I think people were just scared to be called bigots, weren't they? And, right. You know, it was so vile and toxic. And I keep hearing this now that the both sides of the debate has been toxic. Not really. We just asked for a debate, and we were told that we were transphobic Nazi bigots just for doing so. So I think people have been scared to death of it. Now a few people have been willing to put their heads, you know, above the parapet, especially with MPs. I think, you know, people like Kemi, Neil Hanvey from Scotland, you know, these sorts of people now are standing up, and I think it's making a difference because less people are becoming scared to say so. But at the same time, the people that did sit quiet that are now coming forward, I've still got no great respect for them because they put, you know, their own social standing before the safety of children for a long, long time.
They absolutely did, unquestionably. I remember getting kicked off of Nikki Campbell's BBC Big Questions 24 hours before I was due to appear because I'd been in a court reporting on what was happening regarding somebody from Mermaids. And so we know that there was absolutely no debate, and it was supported by organisations like the BBC. That absolutely happened. So, Jack, one of the things that you and I both know is the prevalence of autistic teens within the trans movement. Massive. We know that's been going on for a long time, right? There is a strong correlation, no doubt about it. It's been identified in studies. Why do you think this is?
The amount of autistic kids that are going for, that, you know, that are being referred to gender butchers, as I call them, it's obscene. It's absolutely obscene. And I'm glad, like, you know, we've made huge steps in the last few weeks to get these drugs banned in this country. But we really, really, really need to get a grip of these private gender clinics, you know, especially when it comes down to this, you know, this kid that's in the news at the moment. This kid was given a potentially fatal dose of testosterone. She had one session online with Gender GP, which is run by Helen Weberley. I refuse to call a doctor. She's got no right using that term whatsoever. One session with a counsellor, not a psychiatrist, a counsellor. Now, I went through intense therapy when I was in my late teens for OCD. They did not prescribe anything for me. And I didn't go down the drugs route, but they didn't make any sort of prescribe anything for me whatsoever, including therapy, until I'd been through about 24 sessions, I think it was. Because they have to get to know you first. They have to understand what the root of the problem is. And to get there, it takes a lot of intensive work with your patient. So to have one session with a counsellor and then to be given a prescription to then take to a private clinic over here who still give it to them, that it could be potentially fatal. They call it, isn't it? She's born female. One of the things on that drug is it's for males only.
Right.
It's meant to be for males only. It should never have been anywhere near a girl in the first place.
So it is about time, isn't it, that the law court stepped in properly. And so I presume you're totally in favour of this judge's ruling about the administration to under 18s in terms of private prescriptions.
100%. You know, this kid had been, she was detained in a children's mental health ward for 9 months for self-harming and severe eating disorders. Yet someone has given her a quick session and decided that she's able to make this decision. That cannot go on any longer. And how we've gone from, like I said, testing drugs to the max before they go anywhere near market, so all of a sudden we just experiment on children now is beyond me. I don't know how we've got here so quickly. And it's going to take a lot of unpicking, it really is. But you can probably tell from me I'm angry about it. I'm really angry. I've been angry since the CAST review came out, because everything we've been saying for years was there in black and white, and we knew it. And I refuse to believe that other people didn't know it too. They've just turned a blind eye to it. And now, if let's get the main job done of getting it all banned and making sure that there is no route to these drugs whatsoever. Because these gender GP, as far as I'm concerned, are no better than a common drug dealer. If you walked into a gym and buy testosterone off some random guy and he gets caught, he could potentially get 10 years for it. So what is the difference here? You're giving it to children.
Well, gender GP have repeatedly been in trouble anyway for their practices. Yep. This is not the first time. I mean, that is the reality. Nope. So just before you leave us, Jack, I mean, this is good news. There are obviously shifts being made, but my concern, I think, probably echoes yours as well. And that is, not only has it gone on for too long, but what about the long-term impact of all of these measures that have been taken against people?
Well, these kids now, if you speak to detransitioners online, and I speak with a few of them, what they go through is horrendous afterwards. It's, it causes irreparable damage to your body. There is nothing you can do once it's got to, especially for the girls. Testosterone is a powerful drug, and once it's in your body, there's literally no going back from it. Your voice will never go back to normal. It just changes your body, like I said. There's no going back from it. But we need to make sure now that these are 100% shut down. There's no possible way that they can do it again, and these people who've been doing it need to be investigated. They deserve jail time. They all deserve jail time.
I could not agree with you more, everybody. This is Jack David talking good common sense. And you're absolutely right. I think everybody saw what was going on and people were just too scared to comment on it. But not you, which is fantastic. Nope. Jack David, everybody, a political and social commentator and friend of this show and TNT. Have a great day, Jack. Take good care of yourself.
And you too. See you later.
Back. Thank you.
Hi. I'm your retirement fear. But don't be scared. You're still in pre-retirement.
Pre-retirement? Does that mean I have more time to plan?
Precisely. Here, this is pre-retirement.org. Huh.
Retirement savings options? Oh. Potential tax breaks?
Yep. Boo.
Oh, I could build up savings for my side hustle. This isn't scary. I'm doing it.
You got this.
Visit thisispretirement.org for free resources to help you customize your action plan.
I tell my son, I love you every single day.
I love you.
Now, my dad has never said that to me. Not because he doesn't love me, but because culturally it wasn't comfortable for him. Now that he's a grandfather, he says, I love you to my son every time he sees him. My advice to all the fathers out there, forget the cultural restrictions. They grow up way too fast for you to waste even a single precious moment.
TNT. Sonia Poulton and today's news talk, TNT.
And welcome back to today's news talk. That was absolutely brilliant talking with Jack back there. Now, joining me now for a roundup of some of the day's biggest stories is Chloe Dobbs, political commentator. Good morning, Chloe.
Good morning, Sonia.
We started the show by looking at the hacking of military personnel data. Do you worry about Britain's cybersecurity, Chloe?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's really clear that China is doing some quite dodgy things at the moment, and we really need to be on high alert. And clearly their defense is not good enough. If they've been able to hack the data of 270,000 military personnel, what is very clear is that China is trying to get hold of information about us and data about us. That to me is very clear with TikTok. I rarely use the app because I can see what they are doing, but whenever I open it, every single time you open it, it asks you again, even if you've said no every single time, can we have access to your contacts, your Facebook friends, everything basically on your phone? It asks you every single time. They clearly are doing something there. We've just had recently a bunch of cranes taken down in the US because they found that all of these construction cranes had Chinese spy cameras on top of them. We really, really do need to be diligent about the Chinese. We cannot be complacent about this.
I see. Warning shot there, right there. Would you support the idea that children under 13 need to produce ID to access social media?
I think that that would be fairly reasonable. I probably sound like a bit of a hypocrite there because I am completely guilty when I was a kid of being on them before I was 13, admittedly, but I was sensible and I did not allow them to corrupt my brain. And it's fairly easy to do, I think. So there are plenty of apps. I had to verify my age on Twitter. I just had to send them a picture of my passport. It's fairly straightforward to do. You have applications like, for example, the apps for the various like e-scooters and e-bikes. You usually have to send them a photo of your ID and then someone verifies it within 24 hours. So that's fairly straightforward to do. I don't think that that should be a problem. The only place it might be an issue is if a child does not have an ID. I know pretty much all of us have passports, but I remember where I was from back in Cornwall, there are loads of people there who have never ever been abroad and hence don't even have proper passports. They just don't have them. So that might be an issue, but I think most people should have ID. So
my only concern about it, I mean, I'm all for protecting children online, absolutely. And I certainly made sure to protect my own daughter as much as humanly possible, because like you, she was growing up like one of the first generations to grow up as part of the internet. So, you know, it was a whole new world. But it is difficult. And I do worry that that will just start to roll out to other people and will be used again as some sort of way to censor the rest of us. And I don't want to be showing ID to use social media. Would you want to?
I'm perhaps maybe more relaxed than you are in that sense, in that I don't really have a big issue with someone just seeing my ID. You know, it's just sort of name, date of birth, basics. That's not them reading all of my text messages, accessing all of my contacts and all the other stuff. The other information that apps get access to on your phones is probably much more widespread and concerning than your ID being seen. So I don't think that's too much of a concern.
I take your point. I think that might be a generational thing, but I could be wrong. Let me know in the comments if I'm wrong there. Now, let's talk about prisoners to be released early. We're hearing that due to overcrowding, that space is apparently now running out in male prisoners from June. We're hearing that prisoners will be released, some prisoners, obviously not all, but some prisoners will be released 70 days early due to this overcrowding. What do you reckon about that as an initiative?
I think it's really concerning. The prisons have just been allowed to fall apart over the past several years and nothing seems to be being done about it except, you know, band-aid measures like this. It's just a little sticking plaster on the problem to say that we'll release them 70 days early. And this is really concerning to have people being released into the open who maybe aren't ready yet. I don't know exactly how much rehabilitation they are going to give them before they release them. And you might say it's only 70 days, but this is a trend. We've seen judges being told, oh, don't put people in prison, don't sentence people to prison, don't put rapists and murderers in prison, because we just haven't got a space. We're full. We haven't got one more space for them. That is incredibly concerning, that we can't put people in prison who need to be put in prison. And there are various different issues going on. It is partly staffing. They don't have enough staff. A lot of people leave the service because it is becoming such a hostile environment now, where you're having a lot of violence in prisons because there just aren't enough people to control them. There's massive overcrowding. The pay is very low, apparently, and that is something that's pushing people out. And apparently they're often having younger, inexperienced officers more so than the older ones who are more experienced, just because the younger and experienced ones are cheaper. And that is definitely concerning as well. We also had we've had massive security issues. We had a journalist go undercover and work there at a prison for a week, and found that he was able only to go in without having his bags checked, without going through the security measures, and was just able to walk in. That means it's really easy for staff to bring drugs in. That often happens. Drugs come in via staff and then they're dealt to the prisoners. So there's a lot going on in the prisons and it is a complete mess. It clearly has a funding issue and it needs to be sorted out.
And it's interesting, the people that they're considering are violent offenders, including domestic abusers, sentenced to less than 4 years in prison. They'll be eligible for the scheme. Anybody serving a sentence of more than 4 years will not. And what makes me absolutely angry is, I don't know if you're aware of IPP, which is, I think, indeterminate prison sentences. And these have been going on for a very long time. They've actually been outlawed, but some people have been caught in them. So one man, for example, I interviewed his wife, and he had been imprisoned for stealing a telephone. Terrible. Not acceptable. Not at all. He was given 4 years. He's now been inside for 14 years because he was caught in an old system of IPP. So we also need to look at the old structure and what's going wrong there as well, don't we? Because it clearly, as you say, we know that there are magistrates who won't, for example, jail people who are downloading child abuse images because they say that they're not paedophiles and they don't deserve a custodial sentence. And yet women have been jailed for not having a TV license, Chloe. Make it make sense. Somebody make it make sense, please. You know,
I mean, that's insane. I didn't realize that people have been put in prison just because of a TV license.
There is a demographic for 2022. It is obscene, isn't it? Absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah,
yes.
There's clearly, if they're going to release some people early, at least have a good priority system in place. Someone who's there because they stole a phone. I'd much rather them be released out into the public than someone who is potentially going to be violent, who's going to potentially hurt women in some way. So it's just a complete mess. It needs to be sorted out. I thought it was absolutely laughable when we had that man, Daniel Khalif, escape from Wandsworth prison. Security wasn't tight enough to stop a man running out and sneaking under the bottom of a truck. So the prison system really, really is struggling. And you might think, I'm not in a prison, I don't live next to a prison, this isn't affecting me. But in time, this will affect us, and that we'll have far more criminals on the street. We'll have people not being put in prison who need to be put in prison. And also, it's a massive concern for the safety of the prison officers, which in the long run also puts off more people from taking it up as a job. Prison officers are terrified now because there is just so much violence in the prison. They don't have enough staff around them to support them. You can imagine that would be a very scary job to do.
Yeah, horrible. And you know what? They could free up one place immediately by releasing Julian Assange, and that is in a maximum security prison. There's one place available to you right there, judiciary. Right, let's talk about UK University Gaza protests. That's interesting, isn't it? University bosses will be attending Downing Street. They're going to be discussing anti-Semitism on campuses as the pro-Palestinian protests grow. 10 students at Edinburgh University vowing to go on a hunger strike. What are your thoughts?
I mean, it's just ridiculous, really. These protests get more and more bonkers. It's clearly a trend that's spread here from America. And I don't know what they think they're achieving. Okay, you're going to go on hunger strike. What's that going to achieve? Do you think that Israel and Hamas are going to look at you on hunger strike and think, oh, we're going to change our tract because of what we've seen there? Of course they're not. So I don't know what they're achieving. What we saw happening in the US at, I think it was Columbia University, was just absolutely bonkers, where they were doing this kind of role play where they were locking themselves into the buildings, claiming that that represents people being locked in Gaza, unable to get out. And they didn't have any food or anything in there. And they were demanding that the university must come and deliver them food and water, even though the university was saying, you don't have permission to lock yourself in that building, get out. They're so privileged that they were insisting, we're going to trespass on the building, lock ourselves in with no permission, and we're going to demand that you must bring us food and supplies. It was just absolutely bonkers. And clearly the plague has spread here. And you've got all these tent camps, you've got these sort of tent cities appearing around universities. We thought that it was just the migrants who were starting up these tent cities. It was in Dublin where we've seen this, the place turned into what some people are calling a shanty town. But now it seems the UK university students are at it as well. It's just absolutely bonkers.
So it all feels a bit performative to you.
Yeah, absolutely. I think a lot of it is virtue signalling. And I think, as with not just the universities, but with all these protests, you do have a lot of people who are protesting just because their mates are doing it. They think it's the cool thing to do. They think it's the moral thing to do, not because they genuinely examined what they're talking about, but because it's just what everyone else is saying is the good thing to do. And consequently, they don't understand the issue, and they will go along with various anti-Semitic chants, not really understanding what they mean, thinking it's just the cool, right thing, progressive thing to do. And I think that that is really concerning. And I do really feel for not just Jews across the country and across the world generally, but particularly in universities, where this problem with the protests and anti-Semitic chants, the anti-Semitic signs, aggression from between students is really, really concerning. And so I think it is a very good thing that Downing Street has called in the staff from these universities to get them to talk about this problem, because it is just becoming out of control now. Obviously, we have freedom to protest, but I do think that there, of course, needs to be some restrictions on that. I think that with the rise of these protests and some crazy Extinction Rebellion and just stop oil protests over the past few years, where we seem to just be able to have roads blocked all day, every day, and nobody can do anything about it, I think it's become clear that there need to be some restrictions on how far protests can go.
Oh, Chloe, you want to clamp down on restrictions on our protests. So isn't this completely playing into the hands of the establishment?
How?
Well, I mean, clamping down on our freedom to assemble, our freedom to move, our freedom to protest. Somebody said to me yesterday, these are not pro-Palestine marches, these are anti-genocide marches. What would you say about that?
I think that if they really did care about peace and they did care about saving lives, then they would just be calling for Hamas to release the hostages. Because, I mean, Israel's been very clear that Hamas could end this in an instant if they just release the hostages, but Hamas not doing that. I think that
doesn't that cut both ways, though?
Sorry,
doesn't that cut both ways? There are hostages on both sides.
Israel are not holding hostage loads of Gazans, and they didn't go in and start, you know, Hamas are the ones who went in and went for civilians and attacked civilians and raped and murdered civilians.
So, no, they Zoe, went to a music festival. I mean, Chloe, serious question. So for you, everything began on October the 7th.
I mean, obviously, there is a long running issue going back and back, and I'm not going to pretend to be an absolute expert on all of the history of this. But Hamas is very, very clear in their founding documents that they want the Jews eradicated. That is their mission. And they went in on October 7th, and they didn't go, say, for a military base. They didn't go for the government. They went for civilians at a music festival and did absolutely horrendous things to them, raping, murdering, even putting babies in ovens, which is just horrifying.
Would, and of that course was a Ben Shapiro story. That never ever fleshed out. Wasn't that a Ben Shapiro story where he was running around telling people that babies had been beheaded and there was absolutely no proof to back that up whatsoever? I take your point. I absolutely take your point. But I think that the problem is that the media is largely on the side of Israel and is failing to take account of what is actually happening in Gaza. And I personally welcome students protesting. I do. I think it's like a historic tradition. Did you not protest when you were, you must have had higher education. Did you not protest?
I did not protest at university. I do think, of course, that they should be able to protest. I'm not saying that we should shut down protests, but surely there have to be some restrictions on protests so that, for example, looking at Just Stop Oil, let's say, we cannot have the roads blocked all day everywhere where nobody can get around.
You might say they
can do it on some days of the year, but not every single day.
I take your point, which is why many people feel that they're controlled opposition, a lot of these kind of organisations, right? Listen, Chloe, thank you so much for joining us, being prepared to put your hands in the fire of these conversations. We very much appreciate it, everybody. This is Chloe Dobbs. She's a political commentator. And of course, stick around with us. We will be back after 9 o'clock with so much more. We will be right back.